RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Dr. Jessica Rose is a Canadian researcher with a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and a master's degree in immunology from Memorial University of Newfoundland. She also holds a PhD in computational biology from the Bar-Ilan University and two postdoctoral degrees, one in molecular biology from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and one in biochemistry from the Technion Institute of Technology. She has a Substack, which is called Unacceptable Jessica, and we've asked Jessica to come on the program to talk about mainly two things that she's written about recently: Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, and the Bird Flu Summit. Here we go again. Jessica, welcome to our program. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
And you join us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the world.
Yes, indeed. Like most of us.
Yeah, that doesn't narrow it down to anything. Okay, I want to ask you first up about VAERS, and that's off, I think, one of your more recent Substacks from Unacceptable Jessica, and you've titled that Reports of Autopsies and VAERS and Associated Adverse Events Linked to the Cause of Death. And then I want to get on to this Bird Flu Summit, which you've already written about. What are you saying in this piece on VAERS, Jessica?
All right. So this is my latest publication. It's hopefully going to be a publication. It's a manuscript in peer review right now. I had been, working on this for quite a while, and I just decided to finish it off recently. And among all the other adverse events that I've reported on that are really, really anomalously high in terms of being reported in this pharmacovigilance database, I looked into autopsies because, as everybody knows, the amount of information and the most important piece of information that we can get from doing an autopsy, which is the actual cause of death, is absolutely essential to the whole issue about these COVID shots, especially the modified mRNA shots, in terms of whether or not they're causative, not only for death, but for all these other adverse events. So it's really important to look at this. There is a paper that came out recently by McCullough et al. Looking at autopsy reports in a different way. And it's really interesting because, I mean, VAERS is... It's a volunteer-based reporting system of adverse events in the context of biologicals and pharmaceuticals. So it's not the best because it's severely underreported, because it is on a volunteer basis, et cetera. So it has a number of problems. However, it's so useful. And it's primarily useful in the COVID-19 shot context because there's so many data points in there right now. There's over 1.6 million. So the number of autopsy reports associated with deaths is now in the hundreds. So I'm just going to double check exactly where it's at right now because I wrote this. I don't want to misquote myself. I think it's 378. But anyway, we're at a few hundred reports of autopsy, which it's not a tiny amount of data. And we can actually do some statistics on this, especially when we compare to, say, previous years and associated autopsy reports for, say, a different vaccine, which is the approach that I took. So interestingly enough, there's a huge discrepancy, and it's statistically significant, between the number of autopsies that were reported in the context of flu vaccines from 2018 to 2020 and in the context of the COVID-19 products from 2021 to 2023. It's actually far fewer reports of autopsy and far, far, far more actual reports per it, as per the percentage of deaths. I'm not sure if that made sense, but
yeah, I think it does. Yeah, I think we know what you mean. Yep.
There's a 1700%, like over a 1700% increase in absolute count of autopsies in the context of the COVID shots when you compare them to the influenza shots. But there's a 77.6% decrease in the rate of autopsy reporting. So that's weird.
Yeah, how would you explain that?
Exactly. That's the point. And it's just one of so many unanswered questions simply that arise simply from looking at the VAERS data alone. So of these 387 autopsies, 69% of them are associated with cardiovascular adverse events. So what that means is, like, we can't discern, unless it's actually written in the VAERS report, cause of death is, which is the case many times. But one of the things you can use VAERS for is to look at associated adverse events that were reported alongside the autopsy and the death. So this is really, it's quite striking because it's very much in alignment with what this publication that I mentioned by McCullough et al. Reported, where they say, I think it was a 72% association with cardiovascular adverse events. So it's very, very close. So a lot of striking things came out of this one investigation into one adverse event arising from the VAERS data, which is autopsy. So, I mean, I've been doing this for years now, and I mean, anyone who's following my work can, you know, basically knows that any adverse event that you investigate, that you just put a little bit of a focus on in the context of these shots has a very anomalously high signal arising from this database. And for those of you who don't know, this is precisely what pharmacovigilance databases are for. They're to detect, allow for the detection of safety signals that weren't detected in pre-market testing, such as clinical trials. So it's just staggering to me that all of this is going on. It's still going on. Adverse event reporting rates have decreased a little bit, but in certain categories of adverse events, like cancers, they're increasing, which means that there's some kind of delayed effect.
Yeah.
And people are, I guess, because there's more literature out there now, especially in the peer-reviewed literature sphere, people are starting to realize, especially medical doctors, that, hey, you know, if 10 people have come to me with a rare cancer at stage 4 that came out of nowhere, and they've all been injected with these shots within 2 years from, you know, some date, then, hey, maybe there's a connection.
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, right. So they're starting to report them more, is my point. So, yeah, that's a basic summary of this paper and what I found and some of the strangeties.
Probably doesn't come as a great surprise to those listening, though really interesting to hear the way you've described it and put it over to us. This should be ringing like sirens and alarm bells and God knows what from the rooftops, like we've never, ever heard it before, right?
There's no doubt. I mean, if I could just have the ear. I mean, I'm not saying I couldn't sit across from one of these people like Walensky, but I'm talking about actually having her hear me, listen to my question. And if I got to ask her, I'm like, listen, your organization is one of the three that owns this database, this VAERS database. You know what's going on in there. So please explain to me why we're seeing 1,000 you know, percent increase in deaths when you compare this to blah, blah, blah. Explain it to me. And I guarantee you they would come back to me with something like, or she would come back to me with something like, well, it's just because we've given out more shots or something like this. But I've also, it's actually in this paper that I penned on autopsy reports, this is absolutely false. And I've been debunking this for years, simply using VAERS data. All you have to do is normalize the COVID shots per million doses, normalize the number of you choose an adverse event, say death, you count the number of deaths, normalize per million doses. So that means you have to count the number of shots that were administered, do the same thing for flu and compare them. And if there's a higher, you know, death signal for the COVID shots, you're going to see that. And you do. And it doesn't matter what adverse event, like I said, you pick. This is happening across the board. And it doesn't matter if you compare it to one other vaccine or all vaccines combined. It's the same. So this story, this lie that's been being propagated that we're seeing more reports of adverse events in all the pharmacovigilance databases is due to the fact that we've just given out so much more shots is bullshit. It's just, it's not true. So
they must know that. Surely she must know that.
Of course they do. I mean, they're not stupid.
No, but we're still injecting people here with it and they know.
Yeah, Brazil just made it mandatory for six-month-old babies and up to get injected with these modified mRNA things. It's just insane. It's like when you think about it from a rational, reasonable, learned point of view. And what I mean by that is if you're up to date with the literature, I'm not saying everybody has to read peer-reviewed journals every day, but medical doctors probably should on this subject matter, especially if they're injecting people, including babies. And you understood how many safety signals and problems are reported in the literature to be occurring in the context of these shots. And then you try to understand how the hell it's possible that these things are being, it's unreal to me. They should have been recalled, like, for being unsafe years ago. But they're
they shouldn't have been let out in the first place, should they?
Of
because they
not.
Never, ever crossed any benchmark of any efficacy or safety. This is the most reckless thing. It's criminal, isn't it, actually?
I think it's absolutely criminal. And I do mean that literally. By any definition of what we've ever, you know, done before in the context of unsafe injectable products, it's just, it's mind-boggling. Like, the system has so clearly been absconded by who knows who, but they're clearly, they have psychopathic tendencies.
I was going to ask you if you're given thought to motive here.
It has to have something to do with not giving a shit about the well-being of others, because there has to be some kind of detachment, because it's like we were just saying, if the owners of the VAERS data set are, you know, preaching like ignorance, that can't be possible. They have to know what's going on, so they must be turning a blind eye. And you have to be disconnected from your own species a little bit in some way in order to do that. I could never do that.
No,
if I was
in
charge of a product that I knew was even remotely harmful, let alone harmful to millions of people or hundreds of millions of people, I wouldn't just resign. I would go to the top of a mountain with a bullhorn and I would scream my truth to everyone. I'm like, listen, I've been a part of this and this is what's happening. And, you know, I have a conscience and I can't stand thinking about the fact that somebody's child is going to be maimed for life with myocarditis because of something that I did. So it's like, you know, I'm sure that there are some people who are evil in all of this, but I'm,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm also sure that there are people who more so just they've harnessed this capacity to just turn a blind eye and to detach themselves from their kin. It's like,
well, that's a form of evil, actually, I think.
I think, well, maybe, but it's like, it's not just in the context of this so-called vaccine industry that we're seeing this. It's like, you know, the global pollution. I mean, the mass polluters of our water, our air, our food. I mean, the industry, the so-called food industry, It's the same stuff, right? It's like you're putting chemicals that are thought to be safe by the FDA in a so-called food product into just about every single person in the United States of America, for example. And it's like, you guys are the regulators and you know this shit is not safe. So how can you do that? It's like, you're not only not promoting health, you're promoting sickness. And it's all a part of this industry, right?
I don't know how that's going to end. It won't be, well, it's not ending well now, but have you given any thought to where this actually ends up?
Yeah, I mean, I think we see where it's going to end up right now. I mean, if you look around, just if you go outside and you look around, I mean, do you see groups of healthy people, or do you see people who are like battling cancer and autoimmune conditions and all of this shit that really didn't exist not so long ago as a big problem in our communities, childhood diseases. I mean, stuff, it's just been gaining. And so I think we're seeing the culmination of a massive problem now. I mean, the injection thing is one thing, but I'm going to go back to the food thing again. Yeah. It's like, unless you live in a place where the regulations as to what the population is allowed to ingest are quite strict and actually in the best interest of the people, because they want a strong population, they want a healthy, you know, vigorous population that's going to be like having babies and all that stuff.
Like Russia. Hungary.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've never been to Russia and I don't know much about it, but what I know about the what the people are actually ingesting, it's a lot better than a lot of other places. There's a reason why half, I think the statistic is, of the people in the United States, and Canada's not far behind, are considered obese. I think that might even be morbidly obese now. It's like, it's got nothing to do with, it's got everything to do with a metabolic crisis, you know, from the crap that people are ingesting. And by the way, back to the shot aspect, something that I truly believe, and a lot of my very smart colleagues believe as well, is that these shots are basically, they put anything that you're already facing health-wise on a fast track. So if you're facing, let's just say you have an autoimmune condition, endometriosis or something, and that's been kind of like, you know, at bay, and you've been feeling good. So what I've heard from many people from their personal experiences is that, and this is also manifesting in bears, once they got those shots or even one shot, their endometriosis got really bad. So yeah. Everything, like if you had a pre-existing cancer, if you have herpes, like herpes is a latent infection, so it kind of hides until, you know, something kind of stirs it, your immune system gets weakened, boom, everyone's getting shingles. You know what I mean? It's like, it's an immune system disruptor at the base. So it's like, there are a number of signals that we've been seeing from the literature, like the subclass switch from this so-called IgG antibody from 1 to 4 to induce tolerance, which basically means that your immune system is just like kind of saying, meh, there's no problem here, such that you're not mounting an appropriate response at all against any similar proteins with regard to the SARS thing. But yeah, it's like...
Jessica, it feels like a cull. Feels like a cull.
Yeah.
It feels that way.
It does. Well, it's an ideology for sure. I mean, it's some people would say those are the same things.
Wow. Okay. And here comes round two. I want to get onto the bird flu summit now.
All right.
And another thing that you've written a piece about a few weeks back from the piece we've just been describing. This is a conference being held in early October in Washington, D.C. And I see I'm too late for the registration. I won't get the $625 discount. So I've missed out on that, unfortunately. But here's what the topics include in this, and New Zealand representatives are going. Mass fatality management planning, surveillance and data management, preparing community strategies, local partnership and participation. I'll just go through the list quickly. Delivery of vaccine and antiviral medication, medical countermeasures, socioeconomic impact on poultry and livestock industries, benefit risk assessment, public health, industry and regulatory perspectives, prevention, education efforts and risk communication, command, control and management, emergency response management, business-based planning, school-based planning, community-based planning. That sounds like someone's getting ready for the big one, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and surely this is with the knowledge that we all know what's just happened, but here we go again. So what have you been saying about this bird flu summit? There are breakout groups, workshops, all those sorts of things you've commented on. What do you want to talk about here?
Well, it just seems to me that this is, it's kind of synonymous to what they did before with, you know, the whole playbook for the SARS-2 thing. I mean, we already know that a bunch of people, and it's probably a lot of the same people, at least their money, at least, I have no doubt it's all the same money. They sit around and they're like, what are we going to do if we get this bird flu going human to human and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that's why they're having this so-called conference to get all these strange people together to come up with these brilliant ideas to mitigate the damages that are going to happen if we ever have a deadly bird flu, like mass fatality management planning. And I'm talking like that because I think the whole thing is a crock of shit.
Yeah.
So, but the concerning thing here is that more recently, this is like published 3 days ago in The Hill. They're starting to ramp up the exact same playbook or aspects of the playbook that they did when they were just about to declare this emergency for the SARS-2. So it says it was published by Saul Elbein. Strict mask vaccine rules could have saved lives, or could have saved as many as 250,000 lives, says new study. And it's all absolute bullshit. There's no new study that showed anything remotely close to masks having saved anyone, or potentially, which would allude to the fact that they're just using a bullshit model, because it's just simply not the case. So this is troubling because we already have this bird flu narrative to the point where we're having these so-called conferences. UPenn, the University of Pennsylvania, is working on the modified mRNA product for the bird flu. It's probably already done. Moderna already got a $176 million contract from HHS. To make a new product. HHS already expanded emergencies to include the bird flu. And then you give the authority to the FDA to issue an EUA for the bird flu products, and then the new blah, blah, blah. So it's like this train, you know, that seems to have all this momentum that literally steamrolled humans like all over the world in the last 4 years, that with lasting effects. Most people have not recovered at all. They're still like, we're still trying to figure out what the hell happened. But these guys, whoever they are, same crowd, same money, they're already, I would say that they're 85% there. They just have to flick the switch. They're going to say, oh, okay, we have a new pandemic. And it's all, what everybody needs to understand is that this is all complete bullshit. Nobody has died from this so-called bird flu. It's scare tactics. And the reason why they're doing it is the same reason they did it last time. And the motivation is to get a new type of technology normalized, i.e. the modified mRNA LNP products, which are not safe, and to digitize every single human being, control us with idiotic things like green passes and travel vaccine books. Like, you know, maybe this time what they're going to do, like if they do this, if they get away with trying to do this, what they're going to do is they're going to restrict your ability to fly unless you've been injected with all this crap.
Yeah.
And there won't be any exceptions. So the only thing that we have to do is exactly what we should have done last time. And I'm not judging anyone for what they did the first time, but I will be the second time, is to say, hell no. You know, you can take your pandemic and your lies and your new shots and shove them. Like, yep. Because there's nothing to worry about here in terms of pathogen. The much greater concerns is like how much toxic waste, you know, we're breathing every day in terms of pollution and ingesting. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have a government that fluoridates your water, but
yeah, we do. We do in places, and we're fighting that battle. We're fighting that too. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So it's like, yeah, there are far greater concerns with regard to health that we actually should be paying attention to. This is not one of them.
One of the interesting aspects of this, though, Jessica, is I'm looking at some local reporting here, and, you know, it's the fear machine in operation, obviously. But they're talking about marine mammals spreading this bird flu in marine mammals across the globe. We're even monitoring in Antarctica because there are supposedly seabirds that could carry it. So we have a dairy industry here, which is very important for the economy. That's being talked about now. So it's starting to pull in other, you know, life forms that are part of our food chain, part of, you know, nature across the globe, marine mammals, obviously. So this is kind of next level. It's stepping up a gear. It's got more dimensions.
It seems like they're trying to demonize the whole
nature.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. It definitely the consumption of animal products and fats. I come from this from many points of view. Like, I was vegan for a while, I was vegetarian for a long time. I've never been strict about any of it. It's just that I'm one of those people that has explored things. And there was a time in my life when I was like, just, I would want to throw up at the thought of eating an animal, but I'm not like that anymore. Who knows why, you know, we grow, we live, we learn, we change. But absolutely, from a nutrition point of view, human beings, for the most part, unless you're rare or you have some kind of genetic thing, we're predisposed to not only be able to ingest animal proteins and fats, but we're kind of like, that's how, what makes us optimally functioning. We need cholesterol. We need certain fats. We need certain proteins. We need certain minerals. And so it just seems very clear with this attack on farming which is one another aspect. This is more about controlling the food supply, but it seems very clear in their attempt to control the food supply, which basically means controlling the humans, they absolutely don't want us to have sources of nutrition that are actually going to nourish us, to make us strong, mentally capable. Because, you know, if you don't have enough good fats, your brain's not going to work well. That's true. If you don't get enough vitamin D, sunshine, you know, ultraviolet light, certain, you know, bandwidths, your immune system's going to be in the tank. I mean, we have a word for this. It's called seasonal affective disorder. You know, if you don't have enough, I could go on and on, but it just seems, you know, it speaks to this idea that there absolutely is some kind of culty-like group of psychopaths who's trying to really diminish our species. I don't know if that's true, but I mean,
has anyone got a better explanation? This is the thing.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's like, okay, so why are you trying to destroy farming?
Well, no more than that. You're actually creating fear of just animals now, you know.
Yeah,
green,
exactly.
Mammals are now like this sort of weaponized biological thing that travels the globe to infect you, or, yeah, you know, the industry that's been good for our country for all this time and stuff is now suddenly the thing that could kill you. You know, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, everything's going to kill you except for, yeah, it's really dumb. I still have faith that there are more than enough of us, though, and we only need a certain percentage who are just, like, not falling for this crap. I mean, maybe, you know, the first time around, you know, not enough people knew enough about zoonotic pathogens or coronaviruses in order to realize, like, yeah, this really isn't a problem. It doesn't affect kids. You know, we're fine. Let's just ignore it, turn off the TV and live our lives, and everything would have been fine. You know, the whole world economy wouldn't have crashed.
I don't think people are going to do that, Jessica. I got a sinking feeling that enough people will march, you know, to the tune. And I'm just thinking, you know, because some of those breakouts from that bird flu summit are talking about 50% of people out of the workforce. Where are they?
Yeah, right.
Are they being detained?
Let's talk about that. This is really important that you brought it up, because, you know how there were visuals and videos about, like, these weird-ass camps being built during COVID?
Absolutely, yeah. Australia, and even there's a small one here too.
Yeah, exactly, and in Canada. They're probably everywhere, like just the ones that we even know about. And whatever we know about is usually the tip of the iceberg. So, you know, the question is, what the hell were those for? And why are they still up? And have they expanded them? So you could be absolutely right that the, first of all, let me read this to everyone who's not aware of this. So this is one of the really scary parts about the breakout sessions that are listed in this this bird flu conference that's happening in October. By the way, you can read about this in my Substack. So it says, it's under the concurrent breakout session number 2, and it says continuity of operations co-op and continuity of government planning. So the number 1 bullet point is strategies for operating with 50% or more absenteeism. And underneath that, it says dealing with successive waves of pandemic outbreaks. Mitigating disruptions to essential functions of public and private sectors. So it's like, my first question in my article is, why are we going to need strategies for, quote, operating with 50% or more absenteeism? Where
that
are,
doesn't say like people who are sick or dead, does it?
It's just kind of exactly. It's like I ask, where are 50% or more, because it says or more, of the people going to go? Is that what those camps that they were building are for? I wonder if 50% or more absenteeism could have something to do with induction and militarized enforcement of, quote, successive waves of pandemic outbreaks. You know, and what of the deployment of military tactics and force against civilians that we saw during COVID? Is that going to escalate? Because they use the language in concurrent breakout session 5, quote, law enforcement agencies and first responders, fire department. So are they going to become entangled in controlling the people in this next round? They also use language and words like enforcement, surge in crime, controlling social unrest, controlling public disorder, implementing isolation measures, mass vaccination efforts, enforcing quarantine measures effectively on healthy people. I mean, it's like it's exactly like what we saw before. I'm going back to the beginning of our conversation. They're just telling us what they're about to do.
Why do you think they do that? That's a really interesting point, because if you knew that you had something horrible coming for people, you'd want to kind of hide it. You'd want to bury it. Yet here we are talking about it. It's in our face and it's being telegraphed unambiguously. That blows my mind constantly. That does.
Yeah, it's hubris. It's the enormous amount of clout based on the amount of money they have and control and power over the top people in the hierarchies, which they've planted there. You know, we have specific examples of this in the context of the WEF, for example. I mean, the Prime Minister of Canada is a WEF agent. I mean, I don't understand.
Our Prime Minister was.
Oh, right? Dear. Exactly. They're in the same class. How the hell is nobody calling this treason? That's not a governmental agency. That's some kind of private entity. And Schwabi said it himself. And it's the same thing. It's hubris, and it's like this is going to happen no matter what anybody wants mentality. And they could be right. That's why they're so open about it. He said, we've penetrated, you know, the parliament of blah, blah, blah.
The cabinet. Yeah.
Half of the parliamentary or the cabinet members in parliament in Canada are WEF members, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like, how can nobody, from like the highest, I don't know what the words are, legislative point of view. Like, how can people look at that and not say this is a problem? Because if the WEF are aligned with something that isn't aligned with what the Canadian people, for example, want, what the hell happens then? Because if these WEF members are being used as pipelines from them to controlling Canadians, for example, think about what could happen. Bank accounts might get frozen.
Well, that's happened.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, Canadian citizens might be, criminalized. We might be forced to take injections against our will or lest lose our jobs. We might be told that we can't get on a train or a plane or blah, blah, blah. You know, all of this shit that happened. Do you know what? Like, I'm being kind of litigious right now, but it's like, can't people see?
Well, that's a very good question. What stops people seeing? Is it just some kind of, I mean, we saw that in Germany in the 30s. Don't like to mention it again, but we did see that on a huge scale, you know, and there might be some pretty close parallels to depending on what happens to draw with that, where people, well, I mean, you've got doctors injecting 6-month-olds when they know that there's a problem. So this mass formation, this mass psychosis, what do I know? But there has to be some explanation. And of course, we had a lot of dobbing in. People were dobbing everyone in for not wearing masks or being out when they shouldn't have, you know, to quite a level. So I think I'll probably end up being in one of them. They'll drag me away to one of those things that camps,
yeah,
I imagine.
We're all going to meet there one day, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, yeah.
At least we'll be among good people, right?
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I don't know. I think willful blindness, you know, you just mentioned Matthias's work, Matthias Desmet, and I think he's on to something.
Yeah.
Willful blindness, and it comes from fear, and fear is very powerful. But I think it's like deeper than that. I think even like Gen Xers like me, it's like they're, well, I'm an odd bird, but like the idea, you know, let's go to another example, that a system that we've always been, let's say, victims of, like, say, enormous tax rates.
Yep.
This is normal. Like, nobody even questions that you don't have to give some entity a large proportion of your, what is your time and your energy in the form of, say, income tax every month or whatever it is. It's like you have to do this according to someone. And so I see a lot of, not a lot, but I see some people telling the truth about this, basically the ones who know about like economy and finances, and they're calling it out for what it is. It's like, hey, this was meant to be a temporary thing to get us out of the Great Depression or to fund World War One or whatever. Like, and Social Security is the same thing. It's like, this was meant to be a temporary fix that just turned into this absolutely roaring monster that is devouring not just the middle class, but everyone. It's devouring the whole thing. I mean, it's counterproductive now, what's happening now in terms of these systems which are meant to be in place to help, you know.
I think you're onto something because, and we're going to have to wind up shortly because we're up against time, but I think you're onto something because from what I could make out and talk to many people, the greatest motivator for conforming for SARS-CoV-2 was the worry of losing one's material status. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily fear of dying or getting very ill. There was that. But, you know, not being able to pay mortgages, not being able to maintain standard of living. It's sort of like a kind of debt slavery seemed to hold people to that. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. This umbilical cord to the system, it can't be ever severed, you know?
Or the illusion that it can't be severed. So we're about to clue up, so I'll give everyone an example of somebody who went through this process and came out the other side and never regretted it. So I have a friend named Daniel Bulford, who he was a Canadian RCMP member, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. He was actually like sniper detail for the Prime Minister for a while. His family's RCMP. It was a long tradition of being very proud to be in the Canadian cop force. And he has a family, you know, he depended on his job, and he faced this this decision, get injected with these experimental shots or lose your position. This is like 12 years he held that position. So he was devastated because The first thing, the very top of his, you know, thinking must have been, I mean, I'm not him, but I've talked to him about this at length, was I don't want to do that. I don't feel right about it. Something in his gut or his heart was telling him, I don't want to take those shots.
I know that feeling. Yep. Yep.
Exactly. A lot of people had that. Mine was more belligerent. I'm like, you know, based on knowledge.
I had that like, too.
I don't need a stupid freaking shot against a coronavirus. Like, I'll just get it and I'll be fine because I'm healthy. But anyway, he went through quite a lengthy process of This is the thing that a lot of people haven't done yet, and they need to. Going inside himself and asking himself these very fundamental questions that he knew was going to affect his immediate family, his wife, his kids, his friends, his colleague, himself. And he knew that it was a shit situation either way. But what he decided to do was give up his career, go, you know, without, he lost his income, he lost everything. They had to move, but he never, ever, ever regretted that decision, even with the pending hardship and the huge, like, foundation rumbling shift. Change is hard. It's scary. And it's something that most people don't want to face. And I think that's the umbilical cord that the illusory umbilical cord that people don't want to cut. But hey, you know what? It's really liberating to do that.
I know. I know. It's been really interesting chatting to you. Thanks for making us some time from some undisclosed location in the solar system.
My pleasure. It's great.
And Unacceptable Jessica is your Substack. People can go and search that out and read more about what we've been talking about and more. I hope we can chat again sometime. It's been really interesting. Thank you.
Anytime. I'm available.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.